Your research focused on health and I guess changes, how changes, environmental changes, social changes are affecting the health of Inuit populations in Canada's north. Give me a 5-minute resume for a layperson.
Yeah.
What's changing and how it's affecting?
So I started doing research. I started working with the community of Rigolet Nunatsiavut, which is the southernmost Inuit community in the Nunatsiavut land claim region in Canada, in Labrador, back in 2008, 2009. And the community was noticing a lot of changes in the environment and the weather, particularly around warming temperatures and melting sea ice, but also increased storms. Ice was forming later in the year and breaking up earlier, seeing a lot of, things like fog and rain during the winter months when there shouldn't be, and a lot of changes in animals, plants, and birds. So the community themselves was really concerned about how these changes were starting to impact individual and community health. So in 2008, they established a team of Inuit and non-Inuit researchers and elders and community leaders to examine how all of these changes may be impacting physical, mental, and emotional and spiritual health. And so for 2 years, there was a program that was united researchers from outside of the community with researchers from inside and conducted over 90 interviews with people, as well as creating digital stories that were by Inuit and facilitated by Inuit for people to tell their stories about what they were experiencing. And one of the things that we found was no matter what age, no matter male or female or what people did, mental health was actually one of the biggest concerns that people were experiencing. And this was really unexpected at the time because there wasn't a lot in the global literature around this. So people weren't really speaking about it. There have been a couple of brief mentions like, climate change may impact mental health, but nothing sustained. And so within a couple of years, with that research, emerging research in Australia, interest from places like the American Psychological Association, it was like all of a sudden people started talking about it all at the same time. And so our research in the Canadian North was adding a voice of people who were living in a remote area that were connected to sea ice and that were connected to land. So, if people would talk about strong emotions, so anger, frustration, sadness, fear, stress, a lot of distress, a lot of people really concerned about the future and the impacts on what would potentially come. So you saw a lot of like preemptive kind of anxiety and concern. A lot of people were really worried about what it meant for their children. Could they pass on the same knowledge? Would their grandchildren live the same life they were living? And then more intense sort of mental responses. So people talked about being depressed when the weather had changed or they couldn't get out on the land. A lot of people talked about grief and mourning and really feeling like they had lost a significant loved one. And a lot of anxiety related to these losses and these changes, and a lot of a very, very deep pain that people were starting to express and saying things have changed so much. I don't recognize my home, and I am worried about my culture. I'm worried about my identity, and I'm worried about my wellness. So those were kind of the main emotional pieces. A lot of pieces also came up. Particularly, the health professionals were very worried about potentials for increase in addictions. What they found in the past is that for a lot of people, the land is a source of healing. So it's a place where people feel refreshed or recharged, but it's also a place they would go to heal from trauma or past stressors or challenging events. And when people were unable to access the land and they were back in town, those very difficult mental situations were often still present, but without this healing mechanism. And then people had empty time because they weren't out on the land and they weren't, filling their time with healthy activities like hunting and fishing and going to cabin. So there was a real concern from the health professionals that people might choose addictions or choose to increase drug and alcohol usage. And a lot of the people that we worked with, too, also indicated that they were concerned about that for themselves or their family members or had already experienced that as a way of coping with the moment issues, but also the broader, sometimes intergenerational mental health challenges that people were facing. So there was a lot of concern about, if people have these ongoing mental health challenges from the slow and creeping climate changes that they're experiencing, what's going to happen in 5 years or 10 years if the changes continue to get worse and we're not we're not supporting mental health based on changes in the land. You know, I mean, there's other mental health types programming, but those discussions weren't really around people's ecological suffering or environmental distress. Yeah.
So the climate change has transformed the environment around these people so much that they, the traditional knowledge that they have acquired throughout generation, in some cases doesn't apply anymore, or has to be radically reviewed. So it's basically people losing or not recognizing their home, as you said.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, there's a philosopher in Australia, Glenn Albrecht, and he created this concept called solastalgia. And his work was working with Australian farmers who didn't recognize their farmland after drought and didn't recognize their home communities. And this concept of solastalgia is the distress that you feel when the place around you and your beloved homelands has changed so much it's not recognizable. So when I came across this, I showed it to people in the communities that I worked with and said, you know, this is what you've been saying, like, from, you know, there's this people in Australia that are saying this, and this is what you've been saying. And it completely resonated with people, because so many, I remember it was one really powerful moment where one of the oldest people that we interviewed said, you know, like, I was forcibly relocated from land, and so moved to another community. And then after that, I was put in residential school, so I've just been displaced twice. And she said, you know, I always felt torn from land, and she said, and now I'm in a place, and I've been in this place for a really long time, and I feel connected to it, but it's changing so much around me that I don't feel at home anymore. And she said for her, it's actually bringing up a lot of the past traumas of being relocated and being taken away from land, except she hasn't been taken away. So she stayed in place, but the land is changing around her. So she talked a lot about that kind of still feeling that break and that amplification of previous experiences, because now the environment is changing so rapidly, it's almost unfamiliar again. And that's a very powerful experience, you know.
What does it do to their cultural self-identification?
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people speak about and think about. And I mentioned this on the panel, but I think for me, one of the most profound kind of statements I heard was this gentleman, Tony Anderson from Nain. He was actually Aang Yukok or Mayor at the time, and he said, you know, Inuit are people of the sea ice, you know, they're Sikkimute, and if there's no more sea ice, how can they be people of the sea ice? And that question is so profoundly based on identity. And Shilawat Kluche talks about the right to be cold, and talks about Inuit's connection to land and sea ice in particular, and ice and to winter, and that is who people are. That's how they identify. That's who they fundamentally carry that. So when those things are altered, that level of identity challenge and identity change and thousands of years of ancestral connection, that has such large impacts to people, but it's not something that kind of mainstream health or mainstream research generally considers. You know, we don't think about that, particularly if you're from cultures that don't have that type of connection. I think it's such a profound shift in how people are trying to figure out who they are in a rapidly changing environment. So what does it mean to be Inuit within a time of climate change? You know, obviously people still are, and that's their cultural heritage, but, you know, in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, will that be very different than what it was to be Inuit 50 years ago?